I don't care how many times you've heard this most famous of parables, it's not finished with you. I thought I knew this story pretty well, but when I paid it a visit this week, it said, sit down and listen, you've got some more to learn. One way to tell that we've listened poorly to this parable is how badly we've named it. We call it the prodigal son, which is like taking Shakespeare's most famous love story and calling it Romeo. Romeo is meaningless without Juliet, and the character we call the prodigal is an insufficient fragment of a tale that concerns two brothers, and most of all, a very strange fellow who is father to them both. Another way you can tell that we haven't paid much attention to this story is that the younger brother, the one who leaves home, falls into trouble, limps back home, he wins our sympathy and our affection, while the older brother, who objects to the party thrown by the father, gets our contempt. Most preaching on this parable takes the older brother out behind the woodshed and beats the daylights out of him. But the father is beautifully kind to him. The truth is, both brothers are absolute stinkers. Both may have their reasons, but both are cruel. Jesus, as he started this story, might as well have said, let me introduce you to two sons with exquisite talents for sticking it to their father and sticking it to each other. They couldn't be more different, these two, but it mostly comes down to two different ways of drawing blood. First, the younger. This is what he says. Dad, give me my share of what's yours. You'll die one day and I'll get it. Why don't we assume you're dead now? I'll take mine and go. Incredibly, without a word, the old man complies, agrees to be dead. Younger son turns his share into cash, buys a red Lamborghini, burns rubber leaving home, and heads as far away from here as possible. I may be taking some liberties with the story. Why would a kid do that? Is he angry? Restless? Bored? Sick of sharing space with his brother, Mr. Perfect? Is this about individuation? Or is he a narcissistic nitwit? Maybe all of the above. We've got catalogs of reasons for leaving home. It would also seem, according to the story, that whatever we grab for ourselves has a way of disappearing on us. All the younger son's goodies turn to nothing in his hand. Bad judgment, bad friends, bad weather, bad luck, and it's all gone. He's so gone, he's reduced to pig slopping, bad work for a Jewish boy. He's also hungry. He's so hungry that he fantasizes crawling up to the pig trough for a mouthful, with that mental image in his mind of his face between a couple of munching porkers. He knows he's hit bottom. In Jesus' words, he came to himself and he begins to slouch toward home with a gnawing belly and a speech running through his head. But now, look at the home place. See the dad standing on the front porch holding binoculars looking for the kid who pronounced him dead. He sees him at a distance and he's off like a shot running for the boy, which is big news. Middle Eastern men wouldn't run to their children. It would shame a father to run. Only Middle Eastern women can run to their children without shame. In fact, Aristotle said, Great men never run in public. Mothers run, fathers walk. But this father ignores Aristotle's advice, runs to his son, runs so that everyone can see his pale ankles, so that his robes get wedged up between his legs and they flutter out behind him like an apron. He runs like a girl, like a mother, instead of a father, flings his arms around his son and hugs and kisses him home. Boy can't even make his speech. What with his dad calling out to the hired hands, put a robe on his shoulders, put a ring on his feet, put a ring on his finger, put shoes on his feet, put steaks on the grill, we'll feast and sing and dance until dawn. Such a party, all this laughter and music. And someone grabs the boy's hand and pulls him into the dance, and he turns to see who it is. It's his father. His father is dancing with him. The old man is laughing and dancing with his son and with all this great family of friends. All but one. Older son works late as usual, heads for home after dark. Notices sounds of hilarity on the night breeze, wild music, and the scent of roasting meat. Out in the yard, he sees a serving boy. "What's the good news, kid? Did we strike oil?" "No. Your brother came home, and your father's thrown a fatted calf party." Older son spins on his heel and walks at a furious clip away from this. But the door of the house flies open. Out comes the father. Is he running again? Has he been at the window, looking again for a child to come home? He starts to plead, but now he's the one not allowed to finish a speech. "Listen," the older son says, "I slaved for you all these years, never strayed from your commands, and never even got a goat for a party with my friends. But now your whoring son shows up, and you give the veal calf to him." Notice that he can't even say, "my brother," just "this son of yours." Can't say the word "father" either, just "listen." This one, too, commits annihilations. His words out in the yard come rushing out of him like he'd known all along that this would happen. He'd seen the old man out on the porch, staring way up the road, hoping for this. And it galls him. And why not? It's not just that somebody's gotten away with murder. Not just that the kid gave away half the family's stuff to foreigners. It's that now the old man welcomes the boy to live off his big brother's inheritance. They're all in there eating up part of it now. The father seems unanxious about all of this. Not defensive, not scolding. He says, "Child, all the time you are with me, and everything I've got is yours. And we had to celebrate because your brother was dead. Now he's living. He was lost. Now he's found." So give the father this. The father treats both sons the same, shows no anger to either, puts no conditions on either, invites both to the party. To which we might say, "Yes, but one got a party and the other never did." To which might be answered, "Who says this is the prodigal's party? It's everybody's party. The father hosts it." asking all the children to dance. Father can dance with them all, but will he ever get all of us dancing together? Listen, prodigals are good at parties, especially with other prodigals. And perfectionists will socialize with other perfectionists if their schedules permit. But how awkward for perfectionists and prodigals to dance together. So the whole world is dotted with segregated parties, rowdy, rip-roaring, prodigal parties. And proper, dignified, perfectionist parties. Low-brow, low-church parties. High-brow, high-church parties. And there's a father standing between a prodigal and a perfectionist, outstretched arms like a bridge, pleading for the miracle that might mean a marriage of two kinds of children into one celebrating family. Let's face it, we lean to different sins. Some of us favor the hot sins, sins of passion and appetite, gluttony, lust, all kinds of intemperance. Others of us lean toward the cold sins, pride, greed, anger, envy, self-righteousness. The hot sins are prodigal, the cold sins are perfectionist. Some of us are well acquainted with both sets. Some of us live with one foot in either camp. There's a way in which I'm both sons in this parable. One part irresponsible, rebellious, sloppy. One part controlled, judging, furious. Part of me running from the blessing. Part of me trying to earn it. These two selves are not on speaking terms, but God knows them both right well. And the constant call of God is to come home. You and I leave home in more ways than one. We disappear on a kind of lusty adventurism, wasting ourselves. Or we disappear into the ruts of routine, going hollow there and bitter. If we have a talent for compartmentalizing, we can disappear both ways at once. The mother-father voice of God is calling us to reappear, is saying, show up, you. Be all the way at home in your life. You don't have to live like a refugee, and you don't have to live like a slave. What you may live like is the beloved. That's true home for you and for me. Being present to the one who has found us beloved. Letting this love gather us in to the same full acceptance, forgiveness all around, and a shared delight in the love that loves all. I don't know where you see yourself in this story. You may be mostly prodigal. You may be mostly perfectionist. You may be mostly a shoving match between the two. Whoever you are, and however you've managed to disappear, look, here comes you-know-who, running, face shining, arms flung open with an unmixed welcome and an unabashed invitation to be joined to others in this family, all enjoin to the others in yourself all, enjoin to the most beautifully encompassing other whose child you really are. I love how Jesus refused to tell the ending of this parable. This one is ours to finish, one way or another. You and I take steps now toward how this story ends for us.